Today we're celebrating summer joy as we head into the July 4th holiday weekend. Just before the break, we heard from Keith Lockhart. He's preparing to conduct the Pops at Tanglewood for the 4th in front of 9,000 people. The first live performance at Tanglewood and the first live performance for the Boston Pops since March 2020. Movie theaters are also hoping for a return this summer. And with that summer tradition, the blockbuster.
No matter how fast you are,
I am not to be compared to you.
No one outruns their past.
I am more easy, you trying your best to become me.
And mine just caught up to me.
That's from F9, the latest in the Fast and Furious franchise, which opened last weekend to the tune of $70 million, the biggest opening weekend for a film since 2019's Rise of Skywalker. With so many films slated for release this summer, I sat down with Boston Globe film critic Ty Burr and Allie Johnson, film critic for CambridgeDay.com and editor-in-chief for TheYoungFolks.com, to talk about what's exciting them and what movies will be like after the pandemic. Ty started with F9's opening weekend performance.
I think it's encouraging. I mean, it's still low compared to pre-pandemic levels. A Fast and Furious franchise movie, generally breaks 100 million. I think you are seeing people cautiously coming back to theaters. I think you'll see that, increase. Those numbers will climb up as the studios start rolling out things that they were, holding back. Black Widow, which we're going to talk about, was supposed to come out May of 2020. It's coming out July of 2021. So there's a backlog there. But I also think that almost all the movies we're talking about today are showing up in theaters simultaneously with a streaming debut. Not F9, not the big, franchise things, although some of them as well. So that may impact box office numbers, or may not. I don't know. Remains to be seen.
Before I move on, I am curious, because with F9, according to Variety, 51% of the ticket buyers were under the age of 25. And if you break it down demographically, 37% of those who went to see it opening weekend were Hispanic, 35% Caucasian. The director says it's basically due to the diverse cast. I'm curious, how important do you think it's going to be for movies going forward to feature diverse casts and to aim their films at a diverse audience?
I mean, I feel very important, but I also think I would have said that a year or two ago also, and it's just that Hollywood tends to move its, progresses very slowly in terms of representation, but hopefully they'll see that through the releases of films like F9 and having that diverse cast, especially, or like something like In the Heights even, which didn't necessarily do wonderfully, but certainly encouraged people to get back to the theaters. I feel like Hollywood tends to take like the wrong messages from films that do well, but I'm hoping they take the right one in this case, where they see that diverse casting will help bolster like a community-like feeling of people going back to the theaters.
Yeah, I'm curious. It's interesting because we've seen in the last few years, especially, you've had some of these films, Black Panther, Crazy Rich Asians, Jordan Peele kind of making a name for himself in this world of black horror. I'm wondering if it is safe to say this is now a trend as opposed to kind of these one-off mainstream successes.
I think as these movies find an audience and make money, the people who greenlight movies sit up and pay attention and try and replicate that. That's the history of the film industry, basically. I do think it's interesting that they are hiring indie directors to direct blockbusters now. So Chloe Zhao, who just won an Oscar for Nomadland, is directing a superhero movie, The Eternals. That's just one example of many. So I do think that they are experimenting on a number of fronts. And I do think that they're certainly aware of what having a diverse cast and a diverse crew, in front of them, behind the camera, how that can A, replicate the real world, and B, draw in larger audiences and more diverse audiences.
All right, I want to shift gears here. Let's talk about some of the highlights you two are both looking forward to this summer. And why not start with one that is out today?
We wanted progress. We are black people and we should be proud of this.
We were coming together to say this was our world and how beautiful it was.
We're gonna try to sing a song together. Don't wait for your neighbor, because your neighbor might be waiting for you.
Wanna take you higher? Are you ready? Wanna take you higher?
We believed in what we felt in here.
So when we went up, let's go. Let's go do it.
All right, so this is Summer of Soul. This is a documentary produced by Questlove, the drummer for The Roots, talking about the Harlem Culture Festival in August 1969. I mean, just looking at the lineup of musical acts that are going to be featured in this, Stevie Wonder, Nina Simone, Sly and the Family Stone, Gladys Knight and the Pips. Safe to say we all can be excited for this one, but why are you guys excited to see this? And Ty, I believe you've actually seen this already. Tell us a little bit about, tell us more about the film.
So this is filmed, this is actually videotaped in summer of 1969. The festival took place over 6 weekends, so it's not all on the same weekend. And it was never made into a movie, and it basically sat in Cannes for 50 years until Questlove heard about it. He directed it. He didn't just produce it. He directed it. And I have to say, this movie is edited brilliantly, not just the musical acts, but the cuts between the audience, the talking heads, the archival stuff from what's going on in 1969. It's a hell of a ride. And the music, the acts are just insanely good. You've got Stevie Wonder at 19, like between little Stevie Wonder and, you know, maturity with Talking Book. You've got Sly and the Family Stone just completely tearing up the stage. You've got Nina Simone. You've got Mahalia Jackson duetting with Mavis Staples, which will just set your hair on fire. Gladys Knight and the Pips. God, who isn't in this thing? David Ruffin singing My Girl. It's just, it's a phenomenal movie. In my mind, it's instantly a classic rock documentary.
Yeah, and I wonder also if, like, for me, a reason to be excited is to kind of just see that energy, even though I might not be at the place where I would be going to a music festival or anything, but to kind of capture that essence as well on film, especially right now. I wonder if that kind of changes people's perspective into seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, standing kind of elbow to elbow with thousands of other folks throughout the crowd. I was actually reading that Questlove picked the footage for the documentary from just watching a 24-hour loop of footage of this concert. Basically nonstop, everywhere he went would be watching footage, and had more than 3 hours that basically had to cut down to two. Ty, you mentioned this was a 6-week extravaganza. Basically, how do you make a film about that and tell that story in a compelling way?
Well, each weekend was a different kind of genre of music. There was a gospel weekend, there was a jazz weekend, there was a soul weekend. But it's really not, it's about the music, but it's more about the community, and it's more about Black America in 1969, not long after Martin Luther King was shot. They talked to people on the weekend of the moon landings who are saying, great, we put a man on the moon. Let's put some money into Harlem, please. You get a sense of, and people talk about this, and they interview people now who were at the festival 50 years ago as, you know, teenagers. And they talk about this as a very pivotal moment when sort of the civil rights era was giving way to a more revolutionary time of the Black Panthers. And the movie takes place really at that pivot point. And you see it in the dress, you hear it in the music, you hear it in what people are saying. So it's not just a snapshot of the music or the culture, it's a snapshot of America, of Black America.
Yeah, Ali, you mentioned amplifying diverse voices through film, and obviously I think so many folks know what Woodstock was. I think a much smaller percentage of people would know what the Harlem Culture Festival was, yet this footage sat for decades and is just now, this story is now finally being told. How important do you think it is to bring stories like that to the mainstream?
I mean, I think it's crucial for viewers to have that experience, because I feel like one of the best things about film is that it builds empathy, because you're seeing like a worldview that you might not have seen before, or you're experiencing something that maybe like this you never heard of. And I think part of what would be great about kind of continually getting these type of stories and these diverse voices is the fact that maybe, you know, somebody who isn't a huge film person will still stumble upon it. And again, it's like their worldview just opens up a little bit larger. So I think crucial is the way I would put it. I think we need a significant amount more of it. And I think with films like Summer of Soul, it's a incredible step in the right direction of kind of putting into the mainstream what should have been there for decades.
All right, I want to dig into another documentary coming out this month, and that's Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain. That'll be released July 16th. Now, this one obviously focuses on the life of Anthony Bourdain, the chef, author, world traveler. And I think Anthony himself kind of sums up the movie in this clip from the trailer.
One minute I was standing next to a deep fryer, and the next I was watching the sunset over the Sahara. What am I doing here? I said earlier that I was going to tell you the truth. This is part of it. It was almost never about food. It was about Tony learning how to be a better person.
I think people can't get enough of Anthony Bourdain. And I think that a lot of people are still in some real way mourning him. He was such a vibrant, vivid personality. He seemed like such a good guy from his writing and from his travel show. And his suicide really just knocked people over. And there's a void in the culture that he filled just in terms of bringing people to different cultures, cuisines, experiences with an openness that was just really enjoyable to share. And I think one reason that this movie is going to be being made by Morgan Neville, who made 20 Feet from Stardom and Won't You Be My Neighbor, is that I think it's going to be pretty successful because we miss the guy. We miss his personality.
Yeah.
And I think from what I've seen of the trailer, I haven't seen it, it seems pretty direct in dealing with his issues of depression and his struggles with becoming famous, which I think is good that they're doing that.
Yeah, the opening of the trailer is essentially Anthony Bourdain's own voice saying, spoiler alert, this does not have a happy ending. You touched on Bourdain died by suicide in 2018. I just want to, we always put out anytime we're talking about these issues, if you or a loved one have thoughts of suicide, there is a suicide hotline, 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. I imagine that presents a big challenge for a filmmaker to tell Anthony Bourdain's story. Folks are going to go in and the big question that we're always faced with when we lose someone this way is why? And I don't think that's something you can answer in this movie. Can you talk a little bit about that tension and that what the viewing experience is going to be like for folks who, like you said, Ty, this is a guy that I think a lot of us still miss.
I've seen the film, and I think maybe one of the strongest components of it is the fact, and maybe one of the things that'll be the most startling to people is the fact that you almost forget while watching it that he wasn't like an active part of making it, aside from it being about his life. Like, it almost makes you forget that he's gone. And I think that's a testament to the filmmaking. But I think, again, I think it speaks to how larger than life his personality was. And like Ty said, kind of the void not being filled. But I wonder if it will kind of give people who are still kind of mourning him that sense of closure, or if it will just, to me, I felt like I just missed that presence more.
Yeah,
at the end of
that's
it.
That's such a perfect way to put it, because I feel like in this moment where we have just been through one heck of a 16 months here, struggling through this pandemic, we've talked about systemic racial inequity and justice and all of these really heavy, difficult things that we are dealing with as a society. And Anthony Bourdain seemed like the kind of person who could reach out and connect with people on a human level. And it feels like that's so much of what we need right now. Is that, do you think, part of why he's so missed?
Yeah, I think it is. It's like he gave us that window of empathy towards the world and compassion in a way that I don't see a lot of either talk show hosts or travel narrators tackling in the same way. I think people try. I just think there was something specific about him that kind of felt regular, like your average day guy mixed with this kind of like overflowing amount of empathy that just made him kind of a beacon for people who needed that sense of comfort.
Yeah, I should add that will air on CNN and HBO Max at some point after its theater release. We don't have a date for that yet. Okay, we can't talk summer movies without talking about a superhero blockbuster, and we are due for one of those. Ty, you mentioned this. Marvel's Black Widow is coming out.
At some point, we all have to choose between what the world wants you to be and who you are. I made my choice. I'm done running.
This is really fascinating because I think Marvel is looking to take things to the next phase. So let me start by just saying, are you guys superhero movie fans, and are you looking forward to this one as much as I am?
To be blunt, no.
I thought that might be the answer, Ty, to be honest.
I like the good ones. I like the good ones, the ones where you can tell they're having fun, where they bring in an interesting director like Taika Waititi with the third Thor movie, or Rian Johnson with the second to last Star Wars film. But in general, the franchise thing just kind of leaves me cold. But I understand I'm in the minority there. how about you, Allie?
So I grew up a big superhero fan, especially of like DC animation. So I still have like a draw to it. And there is definitely time in the last now decade or so where they weren't my favorite films, but I had a lot of fun going to the theater and experiencing them. But I am at the point of burnout. And it's a shame that I'm at the point of burnout when they're finally telling more diverse and interesting stories.
So this is also one of those films, Ty, that you alluded to towards the top, that is going to be released, but also released on streaming on Disney Plus the same day that it hits theaters. So this is kind of an example of a blockbuster type film hitting theaters and streaming at the same time. What does that mean for theaters moving forward? I mean, I imagine that is going to be a real challenge just to meet the bottom line if they're going to have to compete with folks who have their big screen TVs and great speakers and a nice comfy couch and don't have to pay for their own popcorn.
Right. It's really interesting because before the pandemic, any sign that the studios were going to take their movies to streaming any sooner than a 90-day or 120-day window was met with the most fierce opposition by the Theater Owners Lobbying Group, which is called NATO, the National Association of Theater Owners. Boycotts, they just dug in their heels. And I haven't really heard a peep from NATO recently.
Well, they kind of need all the content they can get at this point, right? Have they lost their leverage?
I think temporarily. And I think that the fact that Disney had this corporate reorg where now the streaming is the horse leading the cart, that is extremely telling to me. I think, obviously Black Widow is a movie that's going to draw people to theaters, just like F9. You know, they want that, it's sensation. It's a movie about sensationalism. It's a sensationalist experience. And you've got a big screen at home and maybe you've got surround sound or whatever. It's not quite the same thing. So I do think that those movies are going to, unfortunately, those movies and only those movies are going to be still major theatrical hits. And everything else, I think, is going to bleed more and more over to streaming.
All right, so we've highlighted a couple of movies. I know there's a huge list of films coming out this summer. As we said, there's kind of a backlog, so we've got a ton of movies coming out. Lightning round, I want you each to pick one or two more that you're really excited about and tell us why.
One I've seen and one I haven't seen. The one I've seen is called Coda, C-O-D-A. It's a drama that was the hit of the Sundance Film Festival, won the Audience Award, won the Jury Awards. It is filmed in Gloucester, Massachusetts, about a family of fishermen and fisherwomen, all of whom are deaf except for the youngest daughter. And the title stands for Child of Deaf Adults. And Emilia Jones plays the daughter. It was written and directed by Sean Hader, who's a woman who was involved with Orange Is the New Black, who grew up in the North Shore area. Marley Matlin plays the mother. Troy Kotsur, who's a lesser known actor, is wonderful as the father. Talk about representation of marginalized groups. The deaf characters are played by deaf actors in this film. It's very sweet. It's very funny. It's breaking absolutely no new ground. You kind of, once you start watching it, you kind of know where the story's going. It's a sort of coming of age and breaking away kind of storyline. But the performances are so much fun. The local color is, it really captures something of Gloucester and the working class Gloucester. And the other one that I haven't seen, it's opening the Cannes Film Festival. It's called Annette. It's by a French director named Léos Carax, who is absolutely eccentrically, wonderfully weird. If you ever saw a movie called Holy Motors from a bunch of years ago, that's one of my all-time favorite movies, and it is indescribable. This one stars Adam Driver and Marion Cotillard as a married couple who have a child, Annette, and there's something special about Annette, but I can't tell from the trailer. It's also a musical, and the music is written by the brothers from Sparks, which just had this wonderful documentary made about them by Edgar Wright, the Sparks brothers, Ron and Russell Mayall, who are also quite eccentric and have had a 50-year-long musical career that has never somehow petered out. And they've been trying to get a movie musical made for 50 years. At one point, they were working with Jacques Tati, and that fell through. But finally, they've got a movie coming out. So yes, Adam Driver sings, Marion Cotillard sings. It looks transcendently, wonderfully weird. It's called Annette, and it comes out in late August.
That's great. I'll be looking for that. I'm a sucker for a good movie musical, I'll be honest. Allie, what about you? What else is on your radar for the summer?
So I haven't seen either of these, but there's The Green Knight that comes out at the end of July, starring Dev Patel and Alicia Vikander. It's directed by David Lowery, a director who I've kind of come to love over the last couple of years, especially because he never seems to stick to the same genre twice. And I mean, this is a perfect example of that because it's this Arthurian legend about the Green Knight and a mysterious giant who appears at Camelot. And I think part of why I'm so excited about it too is that it was one of the first films that was pushed back during COVID. And I think everybody just kept waiting and waiting for it to drop or get some kind of, you know, streaming release throughout the last year, and it didn't. So it's built up that anticipation. And also, I mean, the trailer frankly just looks kind of odd, very beautiful, but despite it being based on these old, you know, Arthurian stories and tales that people might know, I still can't tell what's going to happen in the actual film. And I love going in with a sense of surprise because it doesn't always happen these days.
Thank you. Too many trailers giving away too much. That should be a lesson for Hollywood as well. Let's keep some surprise for the release, right?
Honestly. And I mean, that's the same thing with my second film, which Ty, I think you have seen, 9 Days.
Yes.
It was another one of those films that was having so much buzz out of its premiere at Sundance. And it's one of those films where just by reading a review, I can tell I'm going to love it, which might seem like I'm jumping the gun, but I truly just can get a sense. And it's about 5 souls who are interviewed to see if they can be granted a chance at life on Earth. And in an era of filmmaking where, you know, we're seeing so many regurgitated ideas, we have Marvel, we have Disney, we have sequels, remakes. I love seeing something original.
I've seen it, and it's a lovely movie. Winston Duke is fantastic in it. It's a really big starring role for him. He's sort of the linchpin of the film, and it's visualized in a way that's really quite unusual and lovely. It's obviously a very unique concept, but it's realized with great skill.
Yeah, there's something so compelling about it. Even in a 15-second summary of the premise of the movie, it's enough to say, oh, wow, I've never seen anything like that. That sounds really interesting.
Well, to me, it's one of those ideas that could either fall flat on its face or really take off, and there's probably not much middle ground, and thankfully it doesn't fall flat on its face.
Well, there we go. That's Ty Burr, film critic for the Boston Globe, and Allie Johnson, film critic for CambridgeDay.com and editor-in-chief for TheYoungFolks.com. Thanks so much to both you guys. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, a burst of pure energy and joy to take us into the holiday weekend. I'm Chris Siderick, and this is Radio Boston.